thank Greg Frasansky again for coming to join us. Second topic is privacy rights in the public domain.
Privacy rights in the public domain. I thank Rabbi Feigenbaum again for the invitation, and thank you all for coming out this morning. So privacy rights in the public domain, I don't have to, I'm not saying anything earth-shattering when I tell you that it's a new world, that nothing is private anymore, and sadly, at least from where I'm coming from, it's mostly by choice. You know, the people who feel that every stray thought that they have must be publicized, that every mundane act they do must be shared with the universe of similarly bored and uninteresting people. And of course, I'm talking about Facebook and the Twitter and all of that. So most of the modern invasion of privacy is self-inflicted. But what if it's not? What are the boundaries of privacy, especially in public, as American law understands it and as Jewish law understands it? Remember that tznius essentially means keeping what's private, private. So we talk in terms of dress very often, but it's much more widely discussed in terms of public deportment and self-presentation. We prefer to keep what's hidden, what should be hidden, hidden. But the world has changed, and public exhibitionism today is at a level I could not have ever anticipated, that people will share the most intimate details of their lives with perfect strangers, that people actually revel in self-abasement, in posting videos about themselves in which they've done the most foolish things just as a pathetic quest for attention, which is what it comes down to. But we know that today you can't really walk anywhere without being seen. And if you just look at the Torah handout for a moment, it's a literal fulfillment, as if it's not enough. Mishan Avos, number one, Perek Beis Mishan Aleph. His stock of Shloshim Vayeta Bali Avera, Dama Lamalim Imcha, know what is above you. Ayin Roa, Ozen Shamas, Vechol Masecha Basefer Nichtavim. There's an eye that sees, there's an ear that hears, and every deed is written in a book. Yes, every single deed. So many criminals are caught today because, for still unknown reasons, they don't think that every street corner, every street has a camera with a live feed. There are very few places to go where there's not a satellite that can see what you're doing to precise detail, identify your face. I got a ticket, in fact, last year in Europe. I was driving on a highway, and like a few weeks later, I got a ticket from the municipality there. A ticket is one thing. You say this, say that. The picture they had of me behind the wheel, I wasn't going that fast, but behind the wheel, all right? My wife says to me, that's you. You're guilty. You have no way to defend yourself even. That is you. I mean, that was the clarity of the... Who even knew? That's the clarity of the camera. You clicked off a radar, wasn't pulled over. Radar, camera, car, license plate, face of driver, that's it. There's no escape. That's what life is. What about American law? You know, there's a letter to the editor of the Wall Street Journal I found a few years ago that before body cameras on police officers became de rigueur, everyone said, oh, it's great. This will cut down on police abuse. Of course, the flip side is defense lawyers hate it because you have no, you know, defense if they see something. But even worse, the letter writer said, imagine these cameras, everyone who interacts with a police officer because of facial recognition technology and instant access to the intimate details, private details, a person's pedigree, you know, health records, etc., they could look at you in seconds, like out of James Bond, know exactly who you are, where you're from, what you do, what pills you take, where you live, and where you're supposed to be going, and why are you here? That's the downside to it. Yet, we're always on camera, in streets, in stores, in the subway. We have to begin to understand the privacy rights that people have that are now greatly greatly limited by looking at the criminal cases that discuss this issue as well. So the classic case, which really set the tone because of the concurrence, is A, Katz versus United States, 1967 case. So Katz was a gambler, and he did a lot of his business, it's quaint, you know, by our standards, using a payphone. So the police suspected that payphone was used for nefarious purposes. I remember when I started to practice, also payphone could be like a person's place of criminal business. Today it's also obsolete. But the police put a bug on the payphone on the outside, and they got his entire conversation and arrested him for his illegal gambling. And here the court ruled that the police had no right to affix a bug to the public payphone, because once he closes the door, it's a booth, he has complete right to privacy. Now, if you just look for a moment, the facts, finding there's no Fourth Amendment, the Court of Appeals found there's no Fourth Amendment violation since there was no physical entrance into the area occupied by the petitioner. But nonetheless, the court held the government's eavesdropping activities violated the privacy upon which the petitioner justifiably relied while using the telephone booth, and thus constituted a search and seizure in the meaning of the Fourth Amendment. So in fact, as the court noted, that the Fourth Amendment right does not apply to places. They could have gotten a warrant. You know, if they get a warrant, it's different. But it applies, as Justice Harlan wrote in his concurrence, which is the key here, the Fourth Amendment protects people, not places. So the fact that he was in a place, it was a public place, but he closed the door, indicated he wanted privacy. And here comes the key point. My understanding of the rule that has emerged from prior decisions, this is Justice Harlan again, his concurrence, is that there's a twofold requirement. First, that a person have exhibited an actual subjective expectation of privacy. And second, that the expectation be one that society is prepared to recognize as reasonable. And that's the key phrase, those four words. Reasonable expectation of privacy. So obviously in a person's home, he expects privacy. Things that he exposed to the public, less so. Is a car a place of reasonable expectation of privacy? Yes and no. It's incomplete. All right? It's a public place. It's a public conveyance using the road. So for the most part, a cop cannot just enter your car and search your glove compartment, but somehow they always find it in plain view on the seat. Who knew? Who knew? People keep these things open. So it's there is an expectation of privacy, but not complete and not always reasonable. But here, he says, the critical fact, once you occupy the telephone booth, are there still telephone booths today in America? I don't know, think about it. I don't think there is anymore. Where would Superman change? There's no booth. Shuts the door behind him, pays the toll that permits him to place a call, is surely entitled to assume his conversation is not being accepted. So that became the dual standard, a reasonable expectation of privacy. The cases at the bottom are are further illustrations, developments, and somewhat limitations on this principle. Like many things, the standard reasonable expectation of privacy is very vague and therefore challenging, and it's just open to litigation. So take Oliver versus United States, 1984 case. So the police got a tip that Oliver was growing marijuana on his property. 1984, it was illegal. Today, businessman. You know, we legalize everything in this country. The police drove onto his property. They passed a no trespassing sign that he had on his property, drove, and they found marijuana growing in an open field 1 mile from his house. Arrested. Court ruled 6-3. That there's a reasonable expectation of privacy in the house and the area adjacent to the house, but not a mile away. So even though the police trespassed on his property, in theory, because it's an open field, it's visible from above, so therefore there was no illegal search by driving onto his property. O'Connor versus Ortega, 1987, an opinion, plurality opinion by Justice O'Connor, no relation, of course, to the criminal here, but the case is somewhat convoluted. It was an administrative search in a public workplace, all right? A guy, it was a problem in a hospital, one of the doctors had something on his computer they found. They used it to discredit him. It was criminal. They used it to discredit him, and he claimed that he had a reasonable expectation of privacy in his work computer that was in his office on government property. So it was a plurality decision, meaning no one holding. Well, the decision got a majority vote, but no one a source of reasoning. It's closely decided. You see from the quote I have here from Justice O'Connor, we have no talisman. That a talisman is not a man who wears a talis, but it's like no magical formula that determines in all cases those privacy expectations society is prepared to accept as reasonable. Meaning, there is no formula. It just goes by feel, by a sensitivity, which is never healthy in law. The court ruled that if there's a reasonable suspicion, then that suffices to search due to the operational realities of a public job. The point being that even in the workplace, on your work computer, there's no complete expectation of privacy. The third case is also an interesting one, and much more relevant to our time. The police arrested Riley, and they searched Riley versus California, 2013, the police arrested Riley and they found incriminating information on his cell phone. They searched his cell phone. If I remember correctly, it was either gang or drugs. They found a list of people with whom he associates, and they found his criminal enterprise through searching his cell phone. We hear too, Justice Roberts wrote the opinion, Chief Justice Roberts, it was a unanimous opinion, that the police have to have a warrant to search for information on a person's cell phone. That you have there as well a reasonable expectation of privacy. And that extends to the home, even the outside of the home. Turn the page. Florida versus Jardines, 2013. Very interesting case that did not split the decision according to the normal party lines. The police took a drug-sniffing dog to Jardines' front porch, where the dog gave a positive alert for narcotics. I mean, they took him to the door, he sniffed quite well. Then they got a warrant, they found marijuana plants. Jardines was charged with trafficking in cannabis. Came to the court, it was a 5-4 decision that said that when the government obtains information by physically intruding on persons' houses, papers, or effects, a search within the meaning, original meaning of the Fourth Amendment has undoubtedly occurred. At the Fourth Amendment's very core stands the right of a man to retreat into his own home and there be free from unreasonable government intrusion. And this includes what they call the curtilage, the area immediately surrounding and associated with the home. So in fact, it didn't reverse Oliver, because Oliver was outside the curtilage, a mile away. You can't bring a dog on the front porch and use the dog as a means of intrusion. It actually followed along the lines of another case, Kyle, I think it was California, where the police used thermal imaging from across the street to sense in someone else's home an excessive use of heat, meaning light, that the person was using to grow marijuana. That was also held to be an illegal search. Even though there's no physical intrusion, but using modern technology to invade someone's cell phone, invade someone's home through thermal imaging, or in fact, even to use a dog on the outside of the home, but adjacent to the home, all that is illegal, requires a warrant. I remember, it was 2 years ago at the APAC conference, they always put these Israeli products on display, and Israel has developed technology, a camera that can literally see through brick, that they use now in Israel if they're trying to apprehend a terror. They'll just, the camera, it's like X-ray vision, right through, and the Israeli inventor was there, along with a police chief from one of the counties in Georgia, which also adopted the technology, and has already used it in a kidnapping case. Before entering a home where someone was kidnapped, they knew, just by using the camera, where the kidnappers were sitting and where the victim was. So they know exactly how to go in, where to shoot, where to apprehend. It's an amazing technology. Of course, in terms of if it's criminal activity, it's one thing. But to use in a general sense, it becomes very problematic. See, I have all these cases where American society, which has a tradition of respecting individual rights and fighting against illegal searches and seizures, an outgrowth of the problems in colonial and revolutionary times, really direct attack on the way the British. So it's really sacrosanct, and you see, even in modern times, the court tries. By the way, this case, Flood versus Jardines, was so interesting. It's a 5-4 decision written by the late Justice Scalia. So Scalia and Justice Thomas, at the time, the two real conservatives, with the three women justices, Ginsburg, Sotomayor, and Kagan, versus the other conservatives, plus Justice Breyer, who also felt that it should be allowed, this case. A very interesting dynamic. You know, we only talk about the polarization, but sometimes the interesting cases where it doesn't happen, we each are coming at it from really a different perspective. Well, I want to focus on one issue that that is a modern issue, maybe affects us from time to time as well, and that is public pictures. All right, there are people who are photographed publicly. Nebuch, the celebrities are very often photographed in the most awkward positions. People take those photographs, they post them in newspapers, now online, sometimes they sell them. Does a person in public have a reasonable expectation of privacy, that his or her image will not be used? Public place, less so. What about a beach? We find a lot of these pictures. A private beach, for sure. There's a public interest involved that's protected by the First Amendment. Some actor, some actress is somewhere, and they publish it on page 6 in the New York Post. How is the image being used? Is it being used commercially? Then it's a problem. If it's used in a newspaper, then it's protected based on the First Amendment. The bottom line is, you can't make money off someone else's image without their permission, but very often it's a fine line. Now, some cases are so sensitive, really fact-sensitive, that you can sue or be sued without a clear prediction about the outcome. There's so many variables. Who's the subject? Is the subject newsworthy? Did the subject expect privacy in conversation? A person, a celebrity, a politician was drunk in public. He was in a fight in public. So certainly you can't peer into someone's window. But what if someone's in the house and they parade about their open window, before their open window, so they can hardly claim a reasonable expectation of privacy? I remember we moved to Muncie. I was a child, and there were two families living on the block at the time. One family was a non-Jewish family, the Blacks from Georgia, white family, southern family. How they got to Muncie, I'll never know. But within a year, they were gone, because that's when Muncie started to become very, very Jewish. They wound up for 1 year, the only Jewish house after house was built, the only Jewish family, oh, non-Jewish family, and they fled to the hills pretty quickly. But I remember about 6 months after we got there, all the houses being built, and Mrs. Black, nice enough woman, asked my mother, is there something in Jewish law that requires you to have window shades? So my mother said, what are you talking about? And she said, well, everybody has shades. The dining rooms, the bedrooms. Look at our home. It's all open. And in fact, it was. They had no shade, no curtain, nothing. It was open to the public. All right. Jews have an innate sense of privacy that pull the shade down and then nobody should be able to bother us. Not everyone is like that, and sometimes today it's not enough. There's a fascinating case. It happened in Montreal in 2009. Google was sued, all right? Google Street Maps, you know, they send these cars around to take pictures. One of the maps, a pitch location, had a woman, young woman, sitting on the front stoop, and she was a little bent over. You shouldn't see the picture, that's all I'm saying. But that, I did it for you. I took that risk. She resented wearing a low-cut blouse, forgive me. She resented having that image, even though her face was blurred, on Google Street Maps. Canada is a different law, because you can make a very compelling argument, you have no reasonable expectation of privacy sitting on your front stoop. Canada's more restrictive, like Britain. She sued, and Google paid her $2,250 in damages for using that image of her. Even with a blurred face, she held that because of the location, people would know that it was her. She had an expectation of privacy. She's sitting there. Doesn't want to be photographed. Doesn't want to wind up in a public forum. So this issue of being photographed without permission in the public domain is, of course, it's a prominent one in halacha as well, along with other issues too. And if you just look at D, I just put one of Rav Aviner's text questions. Are you allowed to take someone's picture without his permission? So Rav Aviner said simply, certainly not. You must be sure he agrees. Now this, of course, goes against American law, which is much more open to these things. And he quotes, we'll see the truth he quotes here, but he says a famous picture of Rav Kook in an armchair in London during World War I. They took a picture, Rav Kook was waiting for a bris, and the photographer later came to Rav Kook, brought him the picture and said, I brazenly took the picture, but now I request a favor, can I publish it, can I sell the picture? Picture of Rav Kook. Maran Arav responded with a smile on his face. It's a pasuk in the Torah. Gonev ish u'mecharo. You steal a person and you sell him. That's what he did. He stole Rav Kook's face and now he wants to sell it. But of course Rav Kook permitted it as well. Well, I think a starting point is really number five, the laws of Ono. It's the Gemara Bava Metzia Daf Nun Ches Amud Beis. Onas Dvarim, Lo Tanu Ish Esachiv. People have the right not to be offended, not to be bothered. People have the right to their privacy. Onas Dvarim exists even in pictures. If you do something knowing or suspecting that it's going to tick someone off, then you're not allowed to do it. And Gadol Onas Dvarim Onas Mamon. It's worse to offend someone with words, certainly with deeds, than to offend him and rip him off financially. V'yireisa melokecha, you have to fear God. That requires sensitivity. And so, as this Gemara ends, kol amal b'pnechave barabim ki'ilu shofech damim. If you shame someone publicly, picture.
Can I take some?
I wasn't recommending it, but if you take someone's picture, then... If you embarrass someone publicly, then it's as if you've killed them, as if you've slaughtered them, taken their blood. Now, we are private people, as the story of my family and the blacks indicate. Private in many ways, that's the essence of tznius, is to keep the private private. So Pasuk says in Mishlei, it's number 3, in Perek Yud Aleph, Holech Rachel Megal Asod, V'nem Aruch Mechasad Davar. The person who Holech Rachel is a talebearer, he reveals secrets, that's not good. The Neman Ruach Mechasad Davar. Person's trustworthy, conceals things, covers things. So the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Daf Lamed Aleph, Amen Aleph, Minayin. How do you know that a basin of three walk out and they tell the plaintiff he won or lost that the one dying is not allowed to say, I voted for you, what can I do? Chaveirai Ravu Alai, they were more numerous than me, you can't do that. That is Lo Seilech Rachel Bamecha, Holech Rachel Megal Asod. You have to keep certain things secret, private. Hahu Talmud Hatamida, the Nafik Alei Kala, the Gali Milsit Itma Bei Midrasha. There's a certain Talmud who revealed something that had happened in the Beis Medrash. Basar Esrin V'Tartan Shnin, 22 years after the incident, he told someone this would happen in the Beis Medrash 22 years ago. Apparently involved a woman. Afke Rav Ami mi Bei Midrasha. Rav Ami expelled from the Beis Midrash. Omar Dein Gale Razia. This is a guy who reveals secrets. 22 years, it's a long time. I know people can't keep a secret 22 seconds. 22 years? No, he's a talebearer. He can't keep secrets, keep them out. So we're private. Another measure is, as the Gemara says famously in Shabbos, Taf Lamed Aleph, Amad Aleph number 9, Madaloch Sanei Lechavrach Osavid. What's hateful to you, don't do to other people. So if you wouldn't want to have a picture of you in a compromising position, don't do it to someone else. It seems very obvious. So obvious that if you turn the page for a moment, Rav Aviner in Shilat Shlomo Gimel Shin Nun Beis has the Matzleiman Nisteret, what we call in our culture the candid camera dilemma. Is there a heter to have this hidden camera that finds people doing foolish, embarrassing things and then getting them to sign a waiver? All right, if you know, they don't sign, it's even worse. But get them to sign a waiver or put it on TV. I used to have a show, I never saw it actually, but funny videos. Or remember that show? You were younger than me. Remember that?
Yeah.
What was it called?
Bloopers.
America's Funniest Videos. All right, embarrassing people. So you need a release for that. But let's say you didn't. Should you do it in any event? Rav Aviner says, it's the truvas on the left side, it's obvious you can't embarrass someone. It's like shvichus damim. You can't be miskabi beklon chavero. You can't make yourself feel better through someone else's humiliation. Can't make yourself feel taller by making someone else smaller. V'zeh davar pashut, it's obvious. Yisod kol hamusar. Masha sanoy alecha, al tasel chavercha. And then he says it's not enough to ask someone for permission, because they'll feel a certain lachatz. You know, you did it already, and there's the possibility of fame, people get on television, etc. No, unless you ask him at first, which of course defeats the spontaneity of it, it's not going to be funny. You can't do it, because you put people in the position of having to succumb, of having to give in to the pressure, and they'll be made to feel uncomfortable. Yes.
What about a photographer at a wedding or at a celebration where they're taking candid images of dancing, etc., where have you tacitly agreed to be photographed?
Oh, so is there a reasonable expectation of privacy? I would say there's not. But you do have these guys, the photographers come around to the tables, all right? Say something to the camera. Would it be fair for the photographer to put in the video a snippet of a guest saying, the chassan's father's a crook, all right? You do run into these conversations around the table. A lot of dead time at weddings. What if that found its way, into the wedding video, all right? So there I would say, in the private conversation, you do have an expectation of privacy, and that should not be done. But on the dance floor, not. No. But if you use judgment as well. And that's what Rav Aviner is talking about here. If a person, like a shirt came off or something while dancing wildly, then it should not make its way into the video. But when you're in the public domain and doing those things, there's a reduced expectation of privacy. Certainly when you're doing something that's appropriate to the environment, which means dancing. It's not so clear, and you have a big machlokas about public photographs. It is a case of Hezek Re'iyo. You look at the Shulchan Aruch, number 11, the bottom right, in Choshen Mishpat, Siman Kuf Nun Dal, at Sif Gimel. As a matter of Jewish law, you're not allowed to open a window directly across from someone else's window. What does the Torah say? Matovu Olecha Yaakov Mishkanasecha Yisrael. It's like, or this, as Rashi quotes it, that the psochim were not mechuvanim zekenegetzeh. Their entrances were not right opposite each other. So that if you open one door, you can't look into someone else's house. So you can't build a window that is right next to some. Some houses are very close together. You have a din of Hezek Re'iyah. There's damage that's caused to you because other people are seeing what you're doing. This engenders what the Torah, what the halacha called an iser histaklus, a prohibition of looking at someone else. Look at the Ramah in number 7, Choshen Mishpat Kuf Nun Dal at Sif Gimel. Yesh Omrim Shetzarach Li Zoher Adam Ilistaka Beveis Chaveiro. Atshu Nitfas Kaganav Biriyahi, Kevin Shein Lotano. He says, you be careful not to look into someone's home, hence curtains and shades, because then you're considered to be a ganav with your sight. You're stealing the private from them. You have no tana. No tana means, the nesivus in number 8, ein lo tana lo ma'omet sham. Yechashdu sheliros niskaven. You have no reason to be there, to stand, to peep, to gaze. No reason. That would be a violation of halach itself. So it's interesting that this is not followed anymore today. This business about not have building a door opposite another, a window opposite another. In number 10, it's the Tshuva Shevet HaLevi. Rav Vosner, Chelek Yud Simon Reish Ayin Beis, that the Metzias Hayom, the reality today, is that people are mochel this, that only so many variables you can have. You could open a window, but you can't have a side of house without a window. So therefore, mistama, people are mochel one to the other, umistapkin be'isr histaklus. We just rely on people's good taste and good sense not to gaze into someone else's property. The gam sheini muslis takel. It's not decorous. It's a violation of impropriety. And again, what you do, they'll do to you as well. Mind your own business. So psak, I didn't put it down here, from Rav Ariel, a case that arose in Kiryat Arba. Rav Ariel just retired last year as the chief rabbi of Ramat Gan. Wonderful Jew. So the he says that ein hezek re'iyo, ein hayom hezek re'iyo. There's no such, we don't apply the concept of being harmed by being seen anymore today, because we all have doors, especially shades, curtains. If you want privacy, close the window, close the shade. What we do have, though, is the Isser Stoklos, and that suffices. No, what about the picture? So, you look on our sheet in the top left, number 6, the Salmat Chaim was the shoot of Rav Yosef Chaim Zonenfeld, who is the head of the old Yishuv, a contemporary of Rav Kook. So he was asked this question about a non-Jew took a picture of the face of another, ayidei michuna hamyuchedet lazeh, newfangled technology, through a machine that specializes in this, shelo yediyas bala partzuf, without the subject being aware of it. Eich hava badini Yisrael. What's the law? What's the halacha? Me'acha dehalo eino maziko ve'eino machastro klum. Especially considering that there's no harm to the subject, there's no loss to the subject. Ulai eino yocho limchos biyado afil chadchilo. Maybe he can't object. So the argument was, Ev Shalomar, Deshayach, maybe we'll apply here the principle of Osa Schor beParoso Shechavero. You can't take your friend's cow and work the cow. It's not yours. So maybe it's the same thing here. Rav Zonenfeld said no. Ein Zeb at the bottom. Ein Zeb beParoso Shechavero, Kim Ayde Mase Atzmo. When there's a prohibition of using someone else's cow, that's because you're doing something with his property. The mitzaru midaito, the chiyoch yucholesor olav, ein odom oser dovo she'eno b'reshuso. Here it's different. The camera is not in the reshus of the subject, it's in the reshus of the photographer. So it's not analogous to parasa shechavero. He said that you can't prevent. That was Rav Zonenfeld. Nevertheless, it's not a unanimous opinion. And in fact, the Mishnah Halachos, Rabbi Nasha Klein, in number 12, Chelek Zayin, Simon Kuf Yud Dalid, Menashe has a different approach. First, he can be a little far out at times. First, he says, it's also to do generally, because he held that photography, based on the Zohar, is, if not a shemetz, an actual avodah zara, because you're making a human image. That human image is not 3D, it's not even 2D, it's not belay, it doesn't protrude, doesn't recede. Nonetheless, he said that it's also in any event. But more than that, and this is relates to us more, it's gezel. You're stealing someone's face. Let's see the second paragraph. Umato lo mebay lemandamar de machmer latsim bechlal shel stalem shuchalim chas bachem. Certainly, if a person objects, he's allowed to object, and you can't do it. Elo afilu bnei adam she'ein makpidim l'stalem. Even people do not object to being filmed or photographed. uregilos hu etzlam, and they're routinely photographed. Like Rabbi Feigman just took a picture of me, apparently. Mikamakam yachol limchas bacherim. You could say, I don't mind these people photographing me, but I don't want this guy to photograph. You have the right to do that because it's your face. He gives a number of proofs. And then he says, Ubar Mendain near the Eshba Zemishum. So that's in terms of really, oh no. But Bar Mendain, aside from this, near the Eshba Zegamishum Gezel, Sherebiyad Adam Lumkorishus Hatzilum, Lemisherotzi Litzalmo. A person has the right to sell his own picture, it's his face. Comes out that there's Hezek Mammon as well, because my face, my image is me. I could go try to market my face to the public, all right? Don't sell that picture. Publish it, don't sell it without my permission, or give me 10%. Skip to the bottom. Imasul et salem, ksav chaver shobashus. Koshken Gufo, if you can't photograph someone's writing, get to that in a moment in another case, you can't photograph his work product without his permission because it's commercial. This gets to the issue of copying or downloading someone else's music or lectures. So Koshken Gufo, certainly his body, you can't do that. The afti kosafti, makom acher, dein iser gezel biriya, even though I said elsewhere, there's no prohibition of theft in just seeing. Avolit Salem also believes you, so you can't photograph someone without his permission. Upuk Chazi, such an interesting, a little out there example. Midina de Malchusa. It's a few years after Katz, by the way. But he says, De Osur Litzale Mikomo Shemakpide Malze Shem Sodas Hamadina. So you can't, there's certain military zones that are off limits to photography. It's very common. Israel, America has the same thing. No photography, military zone, closed, all right? He says, V'koshken guf hatzadik shusot Hashem l'rayav. If you're going to close off a military zone, you can close off a sacred zone around the righteous person also. Yes?
Would Jewish law look differently upon public figures versus private citizens?
Would be the same thing, especially since he says at the end, guf hatzadik, all right? You need their permission to do it. That's what he says. You see, Rosenfeld disagreed, but that's what he says. It's a plausible point. I mean, look, I'm not a celebrity, but sometimes I feel for these people. They can't go anywhere in public without cameras, paparazzi. It's an annoying way to live. I mean, I remember Diana was killed because her driver was trying to escape photographers following. I mean, it's a sickness that they're taking the pictures. It's a greater sickness that people are interested in their pictures to begin with. They're all the same. But nonetheless, the empty life needs to be filled somehow, but nobody should have to be subjected to that. Anyway, number 13, B'tzel HaChochma, or B'tzel Stern, Chelek Dalet, Simon Pehei. He quotes Rav Zonenfeld, and the issue that he's dealing with in context is photographing someone else's Divrei Torah. All right? You have a sefer. Why buy a sefer when you can... I guess you can download Hebrew books, or in his context, you can take a picture of it. You take enough pictures, you have a whole sefer. But is a person allowed, does he have proprietary rights to his own Torah, to his Chidushei Torah? That's the issue that he dealt with here. And he says that, Imrashoi, second paragraph, Lasos Silum, Dainu Hetek Tsuras Rabbiso Negeter Tsono. Ulayev Shalchalik Velomar. Maybe you could distinguish and say, the lasos hetek mi sefer, sof sof tachli so lilmo mimeno. Maybe if you copy from sefer, you want to learn Talmud Torah. Talmud Torah can I get kulam. Lechen gambe mafkin sefer heitza amaretz, lava daitu de hachi, hifkidu etzlo. Mikomakom, kevin shein hef said la mafkid, shaper domin lasos hetek mimeno. So there's no real loss. I mean, there's no profit, but there's no loss to him. Maybe it should be allowed. Mashena kein litzalem bar yisol shein bazemishum talmud Torah also nege ritzono shein lo hefse mizeh. That's his theory. That since there's no loss at all, there's no talmud Torah. Why not be able to take a picture of someone even without their permission? Avol shein mutal lahatik sefer nege ritzon balov magul lekab seido minei shaper. Maybe you can learn from here. Anyway, he says at the end haola halacha. Third line from the bottom. Aleph. You'll add a copy from your friend Sefer, or to copy his Chidushim, Gam neged ritzono kishein lo hefse, when he has no loss. Look, minias revach is also held to be a loss, because if you can only sell one sefer, they will not publish svarim anymore. Beis midina kosha limchos b'mishim etzam ba yisrael neged ritzono. Midina, it's hard, Rabbi Tzal Stern said, to stop someone from taking a picture of another in the public domain. You see, interestingly, that the laws do intersect, the American and the Jewish law, that there is an expectation of privacy. And the right not to be annoyed, there's ono, but when you're in public, those rights are much more limited, and then your subjects. If a person is in public, well, it's a great, famous, righteous person, or even a simple person, they have fewer grounds on which they can complain about this sort of photographic harassment. But the bottom line, I always say, is that's the rule that Hillel HaZaken established for us. Madaloch sani lechavrach osavid. It applies to photographers, it applies to laymen as well, it applies to all of us. Don't do anything in practice that you would not want done to yourself, and vice versa as well. There's a difference between the public domain, for sure, and the private domain. In the private domain, there's an issur hastaklus. So I would even say that, unlike the case we saw of the person in front of the open window in his home, which, if a person is doing that, then he has no reasonable expectation of privacy. In halacha, you do. That once you're in your home, there's an issur hastaklus, and no one is even allowed to look into your home. That we don't have. The overarching principle of all of this, though, which is the good musa to take away, is dala mala mimcha. We should always be aware of what's above us. Not just the camera, the all-seeing eye, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ayin roa, ozen shamas, v'chol masecha, v'aseif v'nichtavim. I thank you all very much for coming. Thank Rabbi Feigenbaum, and do have a good day.